It's the kicky music that means it's time once again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I am your guest host, Stephen Thompson, sitting in for Linda Holmes, who is at the Television Critics Association press tour in Los Angeles for one more excruciating week. This week on Pop Culture Happy Hour, we will talk about how much is too much in terms of how much we know about the famous people whose faces we see flickering on various screens. We will also do a round of an old Pop Culture Happy Hour standby, people we're pulling for, and we will wrap up, as always, with what's making us happy. I've got a significantly reconstituted panel in front of me. As I just mentioned, Linda Holmes is out. We are also sans Trey Graham, a sad, sad development. I believe he's on some sort of vacation, probably sipping a drink out of a coconut or something. So let's do a quick roundtable. Glenn Weldon, I know you.
Yep, I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And this is where it goes completely off the rails. Got all different people all around me. This woman to my left, would you like to introduce yourself to the nice people?
This is Tanya Ballard Brown.
Yay.
Yeah, please, if you could, speak that slowly for the duration of the... Tanya Ballard Brown, what do you do for NPR?
I am an editor for NPR.org.
Excellent. And here's another gentleman, Matt Thompson. Who are you?
Yes, I'm the second Thompson.
That's right.
On this podcast, and my title, new, now I think this has been approved.
Congratulations.
Manager of Digital Initiatives and Mischief.
Nice.
Mischief.
Excellent. So we also, as has been mentioned, we have a new producer sitting with us. I see Jess Gittner, who is off mic and cannot say anything. Silence, Jess Gittner.
She's
but her look, her eyes say it all.
Meaningfully, nodding meaningfully.
That's right. Her job now will be to listen to the conversation with her head in her hands, the way that Mike, our beloved Mike Katziff, always has. So anyway, topic the first, how much is too much? There's always some sort of clot of, you know, gigantic publicity around the incredibly personal inner workings of some life or other, whether it is the Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes divorce, whether it is all things pertaining to Michael Jackson. We just sort of thought we would have a general discussion of how that kind of overcoverage affects our ability to process these people as artists. Glenn Weldon, would you like to start us off?
Well, my position is that celebrity culture is no such thing, unless we're talking bacterial, in the case of the Jersey Shore folks. I just feel like there's this need, this roiling, churning need for collective outrage or collective dismay or collective delight that these sort of ephemeral, pop, personality-driven pieces of news deliver. I don't know what they do for us. That's my position.
So basically, your position is... Pfft.
Exactly.
Get off my lawn!
Exactly. That is a... You are...
Comes as a surprise to no one.
You are reliably a gigantic curmudgeon. Tanya Ballard Brown, help me out here.
Well, I personally like some of this information. I mean, think about Look magazine back in the day, and they would show you, like, all the pretty clothes and tell you about Princess Grace, and she got married, and she got whooshed off into her own country, and blah, blah, blah. So some of that is interesting. And I follow it. I do. I mean, I do know every TikTok of what's happening with the Jacksons. I'm a longtime Michael Jackson fan. And as you know, there's been a lot of drama with the Jackson family in that Grandma Catherine.
Not our grandma.
Yes, excuse me. Catherine Jackson was missing, kidnapped, vacationing, tired of children, resting. We don't know.
And she's the guardian of Michael, was the guardian,
guardian of Michael
Jackson's
Michael's
children.
And so there was the tweets from Paris saying, you know, where is my grandma? Get me my grandma. Bring my grandma home. Grandma, grandma. And then the other family saying, grandma is fine. She's resting. And grandma saying, I feel okay. I don't know what's going on. Some other family member got custody of the kids. Grandma came home. It's a crazy thing, but where there's a lot of money and a lot of people, there can be a lot of crazy.
So you wrote an article.
And this quick blog post that I wrote for The Root DC, where I just sort of talked about how we want to look away, but we can't. So it's you know, 3 years on.
Yeah.
But Michael's gone.
This phenomenon, none of this phenomenon is new. People think, you know, we're talking about what's happening today. I mean, in 1959, Elizabeth Taylor stole Eddie Fisher from Debbie Reynolds. And for years after that, Debbie Reynolds was considered like this long-suffering, virtuous wife. And Elizabeth Taylor was the virago, the hussy, slattern.
And then we bring it up to the modern-day version of that, which was Jennifer Aniston.
Absolutely.
And Brangelina. And people
so the names change.
Mad, but right. The situations don't.
Uh-huh. I would posit that there are actually two types of situations. That on the one hand, when you're talking about a serious work of drama, yes, I want the actor to be able to disappear into the role.
Right.
I want all the celebrity claptrap as far from my mind as possible. On the other hand, there are other more comedic, more lighthearted experiences that I think actually are enhanced by having a little bit of this outerlying gossip or idea of the person. I mean, I think Ocean's 11 is probably a good example of that type of thing, where without the sort of brat pack reputations mm-hmm. of that crew, you wouldn't enjoy the movie in the same way. I think Magic Mike is another example of that, actually. So I saw that this
weekend.
Channing Tatum. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've been reading Us Weekly, you know that Channing Tatum was a stripper in Tampa.
Right.
That helps, actually. I think that helped me appreciate the movie a little bit, knowing that this guy up on stage with this sort of brosive swagger actually was that guy.
I came to a very similar point in my head. There is a difference between drama, where you want to have the actor lost in the role, and comedy. And I'm thinking, I call this the Paul Rudd effect. Mm. Like, I don't care about celebrities, but Paul Rudd's on a talk show, I'm going to watch Paul Rudd because I feel this instinctive liking for him. And it translates to the film Wet Hot American Summer. Anybody remotely connected with that film, I just are in my sort of celebrity love pile, which sounds sexier than I meant it. And it's something about the approach, the sensibility that I'm reacting to. It's not the actor himself. Because in a movie like that, which is parodic in nature, we want the actor to kind of see us, to kind of wink at us. It's not irony per se. It doesn't rise to the level of pure irony, but that presence behind it, that approach, is what makes those movies really work. And so that's where the celebrity and the actor behind it really does matter.
Well, explain, though, because a lot of people, like, really do not like Tom Cruise because of his personal persona, and his movie person is a whole different kind of person.
I mean, Tom Cruise is definitely an interesting example here, because Tom Cruise is not Kim Kardashian or the Jersey Shore cast, where what you see him in is going to revolve specifically around his real life persona. You are supposed to suspend disbelief and see Tom Cruise as an action hero, a romantic lead, or whatever. But
there are still people who see him as the Scientologist guy who is married to Katie Holmes and is holding her hostage. So that's all he is for them on screen.
Well, right. And I mean, I think, you know, when you have somebody whose persona is so bound up in endless speculation, who knows what's true about Tom Cruise?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much secrecy and rumor mongering, mm-hmm. Around that guy. But he's a really interesting example of somebody who, it is difficult. It involves a certain amount of suspension of disbelief, as opposed to what Matt was talking about. Another example that I would throw out there is Mickey Rourke. You know, an actor who had sort of been seen as falling on a certain amount of hard times, had a bunch of plastic surgery, had messed up his face boxing. You know, had went from being sort of a matinee idol to being sort of a more broken up guy, and then was able to ingeniously reboot his career, you know, largely through the movie The Wrestler, but also in Iron Man 2 and other sort of roles as kind of the heavy and the kind of that guy who's been through that stuff. That's a guy who was able to loop his own backstory and the rumors around him into a career, into roles again.
You know who else has been able to do this well? Mike Tyson. Tell me that he has not used every tool in his toolbox to keep himself alive and thriving and, I guess, earning some money.
Well, sure. I mean, The Hangover and
yeah.
whatnot.
Yeah, I think there are a few celebrities. I mean, I also think about Bob Saget, actually.
Yes.
Building a career out of almost a juxtaposition with what they were considered before. I mean, Bob Saget, Family Man, Full House.
And he's like this blue comedian.
He's very, very blue.
And then The Aristocrats.
Yeah. And that's another sort of way of looking at this, is not only in terms of real life and the gossip pages and whatever, but iconic roles. Like, what is Daniel Radcliffe's next move? You know, everybody sees him. Oh, it's Harry Potter. You know, does he go the route of a Mark Hamill, who really struggled for a long, long time only being seen as Luke Skywalker? And it took decades for that guy to really fully redefine himself kind of as a stage actor and voice actor and doing what he does.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is somewhat dependent on the strength of the actor or actress. I mean, I was looking at Uma Thurman in Smash. Yes, I admit. Watched several episodes of the last half of Smash.
How dare you, sir?
I didn't hate watch them. I like the songs, okay? I like the songs. But after watching Kill Bill, there was a period of time in which I thought that I could not envision Uma Thurman not playing the bride from Kill Bill. But she totally disappeared into a completely opposite character in Smash, where she's this spoiled, hyper-allergic celebrity figure who's kind of cloaked in protection, drinking kale smoothies. Mm-hmm. And she totally disappeared into that role. I completely forgot that she once cinematically clawed her way out of the bottom
of the grave.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, a really influential or iconic role will kill a career. Superman, for example, has been the death knell for many, many actors who've taken on the role. And what seems to be the thing that really puts a nail in the coffin is the costume. If you don't spend a lot of time in the costume, where you look kind of like a circus acrobat, you have a better chance of actually surviving the role. So Dean Cain, who spent a lot of time in the costume, but that half of that show that he was on, Lois and Clark, he spent
a lot of time as Clark Kent.
Yeah. And I have a feeling that Tom Welling, despite his limited gifts, will have a second career after this, because he doesn't. You don't look at him and think Superman. You look at him and think schmoopy, mopey
team.
That's
the guy with the
cheekbones.
What about
Christian Bale?
Christian Bale?
That was the next question, is the Batman.
Yeah, well, I mean, Michael Keaton went on to do other things.
George Clooney seems
multiplicity.
To have survived. It did kill Val Kilmer's career, but that's pretty much it.
Also, strong actor. I mean, I watched him in The Prestige this weekend, and I heard no, I am the Batman.
Well, but maybe that's why he took on that voice, though, that people, you know, like, he's like, I got to do something different so that when I'm in something else, people won't associate the voice, the face, all of that with the costume. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, that's an interesting theory. I mean, I guess, sort of speaking of theories, you know, we talked very briefly about the Kardashians, and I had posited in the advanced discussion of this show the idea of the celebrities who function, I think, primarily as decoys. The Kardashians, everyone who has ever been on The Bachelor, that you have more and more, you know, you were talking right up front about like Grace Kelly and celebrity coverage that was very aspirational. But then you also have the celebrity coverage, your she took her man kind of stuff. And I think it's
cautionary tales.
Cautionary tales. So. And, you know, people who are sort of stand-ins for our own rage and resentment and gossip and curiosity. And I think what I do think is somewhat of a newer development is the cottage industry, in which the celebrity is entirely that.
Fame without talent.
Sort of fame without talent, and it's very easy to sort of sneer at Kardashians and whoever the Bachelor is or Bachelorette is in any given moment. And you see these magazines, and it's very much like, who's that? It must be somebody from Teen Mom, because I have no idea who they are. You know, where it is entirely built up and manufactured, and I don't even mean that in a cynical way.
Right.
It is entirely fabricated and set up so that we can sort of indulge our desire to have sort of shared people about whom we gossip. Uh-huh. We maybe don't get to gossip about our neighbors as much as we used to, but we can all, I can sit down, I mean, I watch every Bachelor, Bachelorette, Bachelor Pad, whatever. I can kind of talk a good game. I can talk a good Bachelorette game. And so you can think they're the stupidest things in the world, and I would not disagree, but they're there to be sort of that person in town that everyone's talking about.
So they don't have a career in the traditional actor sense. They don't have work that you can point to. What they do exist to do is to make us feel better about ourselves. They're there
point
to make us
stare.
Feel
ha, ha.
To make us feel less rapacious, less desperately needy for attention. We're not like them, and that's kind of their role. So that's their acting. That's their film oeuvre.
You can carve out a decent career as that. You know, and the sort of that age old question: which would you rather have, fame or fortune?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Kim Kardashian has fame and fortune.
Well,
she
and it's
it,
I always you know
doubleheader there.
I always sort of figured with fame, it's easier to parlay that into fortune, and you have these former reality TV contestants, sort of the best known reality TV contestants who sort of bubble up to actual fame. I'm thinking of like Boston Rob Mariano, or he was on like 19 different seasons of Survivor, and Brendan and Rachel from Big Brother, who sort of keep resurfacing on other reality TV shows. Well, you really missed out.
You gotta get to Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. That I'm watching. That is some trash to watch.
I would say, I mean, I would question whether for all of us, these reality stars especially exist so that they make us feel better, or whether it's just another version of a soap opera, and that you can actually not sink into their lives and sort of easy to follow dramas as much as that they are very familiar archetypes, and each show is chosen with its familiar archetypes that are...
But those archetypes are imposed upon them. The narratives are imposed upon them. This is going back to my point, because I think that stories exist to instruct and to enlighten and to discomfort. Stories. There's all kinds of stories in the world. There's movies, television, radio, plays, whatever. These don't. These stories are not stories. They have no structure. They're just things that we impose upon people because they're kind of similar to, you know, a tragic fall or anything like that. So that's why I feel like they're empty calories. And this is not a controversial assertion.
No.
I realize that. Mm-hmm. But that's my instinctive
pullback. You can also, in a sense, sort of view them almost of like lives as performance art.
Yeah.
And the point that Matt made, and I've said this about The Bachelor and The Bachelorette many, many times, is it has just risen, for lack of a better word, into the status of America's soap opera. Mm-hmm. And used to be, you know, and obviously some soap operas thankfully still exist. A lot of them have gone away. But you would go to the supermarket checkout, and there was certainly one or two kind of gossip, you know, National Enquirer, somewhat disreputable sources and whatever, that would sort of have, like, whoever's agonizing last days. And, of course, your Weekly World News and your Bat Boy. And but then it would be soap operas, soap operas, soap operas, soap operas. You know, is Victor Newman, you know, about to... this farce of a marriage.
Yeah, I knew we were going to get it.
You knew
as
you
soon
were
as I heard Victor Newman, I knew we were going to get it.
But
I love that show.
I have too. But, you know, as those shows, a lot of those shows really sadly go away. A lot of really what they're being replaced with is incessant, you know, speculation about the lives of various bachelors, Kardashians, housewives, and what have you. Mm. So how do you, the listener, feel about celebrity? And how it affects your enjoyment of art. Are there performances? Are there albums in the case of Michael Jackson, for example? I mean, I've felt like Michael Jackson's life has crept into his music to the point where it's been very difficult to enjoy it at times. Is there art that you are unable to enjoy because of the nature of the celebrity of the artists who make it? Please come to our Facebook page at facebook.com/PCHH. You can also find us on the blog at npr.org/PCHH. Our next topic. We have covered this area before, but with kind of a new cast of characters around us, around me and Glenn, we figured we would do another round of a segment that we like to call "People We're Pulling For." Maybe it's somebody everybody already likes, but you want to just throw in your endorsement. Maybe it's somebody whose success you would like to goose a little bit as they make their way through their careers. I'm going to start with Matt Thompson. Who are you pulling for, buddy?
I am generally pulling for the universe of self-publishers and show creators. I have had the delight recently of sinking into a couple of books by a fellow named Ben Monopoly. Self-published guy, gay author, and has written two books, The Cranberry Hush and The Painting of Porcupine City, both of which have been delightful Kindle offerings sold on the Amazon store before ultimately he put them in print somehow.
What about?
Each sort of about ambiguities at the beginning of a relationship, which is really nice. I mean, particularly sort of interlaid with the theme of gay coming-of-age story, because there is just that ambiguity of not knowing, not just not knowing whether he likes you, but not knowing whether he could like you.
Mm-hmm.
And he does that really well, but feeling often that I've exhausted the gay canon, the David Levitts and Michael Cunninghams of the world, and I'm always searching for new literature on these subjects, it's really heartening to know that there is this proliferating world of self-publishers, people who just have the writing bug and just are going out and doing it. I think the same is true, actually, for YouTube and the web series, seeing these great video producers. There's another one, again, also, sorry, gay.
this show really rejects.
Don't be sorry about that.
Sorry, it's just
we frown.
My media tastes have been sort of unidirectional the past couple of weeks. But there's this show called The Outs being produced by a fellow named Adam Goldman and his merry band of collaborators, and it's really nicely done. The scripts are well paced. The show is beautifully shot, and I love seeing this flourishing ecosystem of people doing it for themselves.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a wonderful development. And I mean, obviously, you can tie that in with your Kickstarter and your podcasting, like, for example, what we're doing right now, where you don't have to go through as many gatekeepers, and it's a very it's a very exciting time.
Yeah.
So, the ecosystem at large.
I'm pulling for the ecosystem.
That's right. Thank you, Matt Thompson. Hey, Tanya Ballard Brown, who are you pulling for?
You know, I was looking back through some of my tweets, not my twits, through my tweets, and realized that I had not spent any time really exploring D'Angelo.
Oh,
again.
Yeah.
In the early 90s, he sort of helped craft this neo-soul music genre. He was a leader there, if you were. And honestly, my dad introduced me to D'Angelo. My dad likes like a lot of bass. And we went on a road trip, and the whole time he played D'Angelo. And by the time I got back, if I didn't like him when I left, I had to like him coming back. I like or hate him. But he fell into some troubles.
A serious car accident, among other things.
Yes, and drugs and some other things. And he's doing a comeback. And I always liked his music. I always thought he was real promising. So I'm hoping that this comeback will actually be a great comeback, and we'll hear much more from him.
Yeah, he hasn't put out a record, I mean, since 2000, and he's a little bit become like, when is Guns N' Roses going to put out Chinese Democracy?
Because over the last few years, you'd hear, there's this new song. There's a video where we think it's a new song, that D'Angelo has put
out. Someone captured five bars on their cell phone while he was humming on the subway, yeah.
So, I mean, people were, really, and you'd see these pictures, and he was attractive, too. It didn't hurt to look at this man as he sang.
Very, very frequently shirtless.
And, right. And then he got to a point where he needed to have a shirt on. And
haven't we all?
And it looks like he may be getting back to the shirtless era. Mm-hmm. So I just hope that he has been able to sort of put all of whatever behind him and get back into the music and the creating and really just...
Right. Free D'Angelo's abs.
Right. I am pro using shirtlessness as a metric for artistic success.
He is a perfect example of what we're talking about with this segment. And, by all means, to piggyback on what Tanya's saying, if you don't have D'Angelo's records, there's only a very small handful of recordings. There's a record called Voodoo that is fantastic.
Yes, yes, yes.
If you have not heard his music, I mean, go to YouTube, pick up his records, support the Bring Back D'Angelo.
And his abs.
We still, even if he has to wear a muumuu, we support D'Angelo and hope that he comes back soon. Great pick. Glenn Weldon.
Ben Falcone is an actor who has been bouncing around for a long time. He had a regular gig on Joey for his sins. And he has started to turn up recently doing bit parts on shows that are very funny, like Up All Night and Happy Endings. He got a big break in Bridesmaids last year, where he played, he had a very funny scene with Melissa McCarthy on an airplane.
Feel that undercarriage?
Yeah. Okay, he played the air marshal, okay? It's supposed to be a spoiler. It's supposed to, but, I mean, it's been out a year, so deal with it.
First watch.
Exactly. He has just now made a Target commercial where he plays a music teacher. He does a version of the song Word Up about denim. The song is annoying, but here's a guy who really nails what this ad calls for, which is a sort of awkward, earnest music teacher guy who's very self-impressed. In 30 seconds, you get this character right away. I mean, I don't know how you feel about Target, but the people who do the casting for the commercials...
I was going to say, because you've pulled for another Target commercial.
Exactly. Maria Bamford and Ben Falcone. So whoever's over there doing it, they are it-getters, and I am...
you are pulling for the ad agency who brings us Target
commercials.
I am pulling
specifically for Ben Falcone, but he's gonna break big. He happens to be married to Melissa McCarthy. Not that that's important. We value him for his own gifts. But, he's very funny.
Ben Falcone. Nice pick. Well, I personally, among other things, am pulling for the United States in the Olympics, even though as of this taping, I have watched not one second of the Olympics.
Not even the opening ceremony?
I was driving to Newport, Rhode Island. I've missed everything.
The tribute to the NHS.
I mean, you know, the kids and the beds and the nurses and such. It
and
was
the prancing doctors. And
I was able to sort of retroactively follow a little bit of the Olympic opening ceremonies via Twitter. Okay. In a way, it's almost better than watching because you can paint the Olympic opening ceremony in your head as told by your various sarcastic jerk friends.
Yep.
But no, actually, the person who came to mind, and I was actually, I had stepped out of the discussion of Breaking Bad a few weeks ago when you guys brought up the subject of Bob Odenkirk. And, you know, Bob Odenkirk, among other things, plays Saul, the smarmy lawyer on Breaking Bad, and sort of provides that kind of infusion of sweaty comedy. And I basically sat there the entire time thinking, oh, I love Bob Odenkirk! and realized and sort of had it triggered, A, by watching the, you know, one of the most recent episodes of Breaking Bad, but B, by you guys talking about how much you guys love Bob Odenkirk, that he and the comedian and actor David Cross did a show together called Mr. Show on HBO in the late 90s, which is seriously one of my favorite things ever on television. It's a, and Tanya is giving me quizzical looks, which are actually delighting me because it means it's one more person who's going to go back and check out Mr. Show. There are tons of Mr. Show clips on YouTube, whether they're supposed to be there or not. It's a 30 episodes, half hour sketch comedy show. Is Bob Odenkirk, David Cross, Paul F. Tompkins, Tom Kenny, who very soon after became the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants. If you ever want to hear the person who is obviously the voice of SpongeBob doing incredibly raunchy humor, and I know you do. but you know, David Cross sort of immediately went from Mr. Show into a ton of really high-profile character acting. Everything from, you know, he is Tobias on Arrested Development, he's the bad guy in the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies. I'm sure that's the credit he would most like me to recite. Has done a bunch of stand-up records. Whereas Bob Odenkirk kind of bounced around a little bit and directed a bunch of movies with very, very mixed results. There's a movie called Melvin Goes to Dinner that some people really like, but there's also a movie called Let's Go to Jail, which everybody who knows that movie kind of goes, oh, yeah. You know, and there was the Mr. Show movie Run, Ronnie, Run that's a very mixed bag. And I had worried for a while, like, oh, no, you know, is Bob Odenkirk going to have kind of that same run that David Cross has had? And now, because of Breaking Bad, I feel like finally, I mean, he's clearly liked by casting directors. He's clearly admired in Hollywood. But I really want to see that guy break out as not only an incredibly funny guy, but a really good actor. And so Bob Odenkirk is
a great choice. You know, in last week's episode of Comedy Bang Bang, the podcast, they had Bob Odenkirk on, and he played these clips that he and David Cross came up with for a planned podcast of their own. That podcast didn't come to pass, but those clips are just, they're new Mr. Show, essentially. They're like a little taste of what could be. It's so good. So fun to hear again. Great choice.
You know, I worked with a lot of people like Bob Odenkirk at The Onion. Just one of those, like, black circles under the eyes comedy technician. And I always root for black circles under the eyes comedy technicians. Bless his heart, Bob Odenkirk. So if you've got someone you're pulling for, dear listener, please go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/PCHH. And that brings us to our final segment, which is what's making us happy this week. I'm going to just get all crazy. I'm going to start with Tanya Ballard Brown. Tanya, what is making you happy this week?
Grimm is coming back.
You just want to lord it over us.
That's right.
Because all my shows won.
Yes, all your shows.
Three of the shows that you played.
That's right. You put your roulette chip. Just to back up for those who don't follow our shows every move, we did a round of like what shows we thought were going to be successful from a given new fall TV season. And I was all proud because I picked Revenge and I was all right and everything.
Revenge!
But Tanya Ballard Brown happened to be sitting in that episode and was like, I pick Once Upon a Time and also Grimm and also all the other successful
no,
shows.
No, Scandal.
Scandal.
That's right. So anyway, so Grimm is coming back.
Yeah, and I'm ready. Like, I'm dying to see you because the last episode was a cliffhanger and
You need closure.
Yes. I need to know what's going to happen.
Tanya, give us a quick synopsis of Grimm for those who haven't seen the show.
Okay. If you ever, as a child, read Grimm's Fairy Tales, which I did, that was my favorite thing to do. I read them all the time. you would love this show. Of course, I'm not flacking for this show, so I'm going to tell you about this show. So this man is a Grimm, and basically some of the stories in the book are coming true, like real life. So he's having to hunt down the wolf from Red Riding Hood and the witch in the house that the kids Hansel and Gretel went to. And so super fantastic, great. And they left me with a cliffhanger, and I must know what's going to happen.
Thematically similar to Once Upon a Time, but much darker.
Yes, much, much darker. People die, and they get, like, terrible diseases, and this man was eating chalk, and...
much more probably faithful to the actual darkness of the Grimm's fairy tale.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These are desanitized.
The Once Upon a Time is getting, it's getting a little...
That's true.
Odd as well. I mean, it was already odd, but...
So Grimm, coming back, NBC... What day is it coming back, Tanya Ballard-Brown?
August 13th.
Mark those calendars.
Yes. But you know there'll be a problem.
What's that?
Because I'm over my Idris Elba crush.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
I am not.
You're over it. He's just dead to you now.
He's not dead to me. But I've moved on. I've accepted that it's not going to happen. However, I am still crushing on Nathan Fillion. And Castle comes on Mondays at 10 as well. And so... You know, my DVR is going to be packed. I just will not miss Castle. That show may have jumped the shark for other people, but that is still my show.
Well, and it's still Nathan Fillion, who is, as we have discussed on this show, he's sort of one of our official people who delight us.
I know. And if only he would listen and come visit us or something. Or just visit me.
What are we to you, Tanya?
Hopefully you're my new dating service.
There's a plaintiveness in that.
We are your gateway to access to beauty.
And Nathan Fillion.
Okay. Matt Thompson, what's making you happy this week, buddy?
Just when I thought that somebody that I used to know had descended into the bowels of my listening devices.
The Gautier song, not somebody that you used to know.
Yes, the Gautier song. Someone brings it back with Gautier meets Aaliyah's Are You That Somebody That I Used To Know? Which I would not have thought worked.
It did work,
however,
you're right.
It seriously works. I mean, okay, but that's not the serious one. I've just been playing. I spent the weekend, or some hours this weekend, some untold hours, playing an old school adventure game in the vein of Maniac Mansion, for those of you who used to play that on your PCs or possibly your Nintendos, called Resonance. Really old, kind of point-and-click adventure, Sierra style, King's Quest V style point-and-click adventure where you go around hunting for the pixel to click on to solve the puzzle that will bring your long-lost treasure back to its intended owner. I've had a lot of fun playing this kind of throwback to the past. I think that folks... I would recommend it, even if you've never played or have no nostalgic feelings for an old-school adventure. This one is well-told enough and interesting enough that you could spend an afternoon and surprise yourself.
The game is called Resonance?
It's called Resonance.
And people can find that how?
People can find that on Steam, the game store on PC, or just Google Resonance Game.
Nice. Resonance. Excellent pick, Matt Thompson. You know, it's interesting, you mentioned the Gautier song and an awesome mashup. You know, there are three songs this year.
Yeah.
Have you guys noticed that there are just three songs? Yeah. And I just want to posit that the world, you know, the whole notion is like the news cycles are so small and everything's so ephemeral now. I think because of the sort of, here's Call Me Maybe mixed with Third Eye Blind, Semi-Charmed Life. It's a hot new mashup. But these are actually making these things less ephemeral to the point where they never go the hell away.
Yeah. Zombie Gautier.
Zombie Gautier, Zombie Carly Rae, Zombie Fun can all be mashed up. And eventually, at some point, somebody's going to make a new song.
Poor zombies like Nicki Minaj.
And hopefully that new song maker will be D'Angelo.
There you go.
You know, see how you bring it in full circle.
Bring it in full circle. You are a pro.
If someone mashes up D'Angelo with Aaliyah, I will be so happy.
Yes, that could work.
Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
Two things. On Sunday, Jason Bateman tweeted a photo of Michael Cera on the set of the new episodes of Arrested Development. They're still building the sets, but there he is, and there it is, and it's happening. It's actually happening. So
will the Never Nude come back?
I think they got everybody. They got everybody. We'll see. But the other thing is, I mentioned a podcast on this show a while back called Girl on Guy. It's an interview show with Aisha Tyler. It was good, but like many of the things I recommend, I stopped listening to it after a while.
I'm done with this.
Yes, because, you know, I thought I knew what it was about. Also, she was still coming into her gifts as an interviewer. She was talking about herself a hell of a lot. She just...
There's a problem with that?
Well, just this last week, she interviewed RuPaul, and I'm interested in RuPaul. He's one of those...
Speaking of people we're pulling for.
Exactly. And, you know, it's an hour and a half interview, and it's quite long. And is there a more than sufficient amount of astrology talk and affirmational crap? Yes. Yes, there is. Is there more a surfeit of self-regard? Well, yeah. Diva. I mean, obviously, there's going to be a surfeit of self-regard. But he's an interesting guy. I had no idea that he came from the punk rock performance art scene as opposed to the traditional drag scene. But the other thing about him is, for somebody to do what he does, there has to be a tremendous amount of self-awareness as well. He knows exactly who he is and what he's doing. And at one point in the interview, he says when anybody tries to write jokes for him, they don't work because they always make him bitchy. And he says in the interview, "I don't do bitchy. I do sassy." And I thought to myself, he is right.
Yeah.
He is exactly right about what he does. And Aisha Tyler's gotten better at being an interviewer. She shuts up more. So I recommend that. I recommend that interview.
Yeah, RuPaul's not mean.
No.
No.
Not at all.
No. It's coming from a very good place. I mean, the show, Drag Race and Drag U, both those shows have a very sort of positive...
Very good-natured.
Very good-natured place. They're coming from a great...
Unlike in some moments, America's Next Top Model.
Sure.
I'm holding two cards
I
in front of
me.
Only one girl will be able to stay.
You both did simultaneously tie her Banks address that were both somehow add up to Tyra Banks.
You know, I feel like it was a nice mashup. Speaking of callbacks, thank you, Glenn Weldon. Girl on Guy, Aisha Tyler, podcast.
Yeah.
Excellent. A couple of quick things in terms of what is making me happy. I did literally just moments ago walk in the door coming from the Newport Folk Festival in Newport, Rhode Island, which is always just an incredibly happy-making event. I've gone for 3 years now and have yet to encounter a single person I don't like. Met dozens upon dozens of incredibly kind people who listen to this show, who listened to All Songs Considered, who, you know, like NPR, who came up and were extraordinarily incredibly sweet. So just had a wonderful experience at the festival. If for those who would like to actually experience some of that festival, you can go to NPR Music and check out our Newport coverage. We've archived many of the concerts there. And those of you who might want to go to the Newport Jazz Festival, which unfortunately I am not attending, it is this coming weekend, and our beloved, esteemed producer emeritus, Mike Katziff. He's going to go back for one last score for NPR Music.
That's right, just before retirement.
Right before retirement, before he joins the sunny shores of WNYC, Mike Katziff will be under the NPR tent wearing headphones, probably like working and stuff. But if you do see Mike Katziff, please tell him hello. So again, lovely time, Newport Folk Festival. Finally, you know, I do have two beautiful children, so one would think I'm not necessarily a man in search of a worthy heir.
Oh, my God.
But my children, my beloved children, have competition. Because Thompson the Kitten...
Oh, yes.
Oh,
discussed recently on this show...
The Cat Who Lived.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There is a Weldon, too. They found a new Weldon.
All right.
The lovely animal shelter in Brooklyn that was naming a litter of kittens after the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. They were able to adopt out little homes. They had no trouble adopting little Graham, two beautiful little kittens. Unfortunately, as we said, little Weldon originally did not make it, but there is a new one. I was very concerned that poor loveless Thompson was sitting unadopted. But over the weekend, I received the glorious news that little Thompson is loveless and unowned no more.
Uh-huh.
So I want to thank Rachel Lyon and John Kleber for adopting little Thompson. And then they are actually tweeting the pictures and adventures of little Thompson as he like bites their noses, as actually their namesake would do if I were in their home.
Have they created a Twitter persona for little Thompson?
Well, they have a little hashtag kitten tweets, and I'm guessing other people probably use the hashtag kitten tweets. But you can
guess.
You can follow the adventures of Little Thompson the Kitten at the Twitter handle Manatees in Trees, which is the Twitter handle of Rachel Lyon. And those of you who are so fascinated by Pop Culture Happy Hour that you want to know the adventures of the kitten we helped inspire the name of. I don't know where that sentence is going. You can follow Rachel Lyon at Manatees and Trees. And thank you to Rachel and John and to the Brooklyn Bridge Animal Welfare Coalition, which is going around naming pets after NPR folks like crazy because they're geniuses. If you are in the market for a pet, name it after us. Thank you. And that brings us to the end of another episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can follow our usual host, Linda Holmes, on Twitter at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow me, Stephen Thompson, your thankfully temporary host, at I Dislike Stephen. You can follow Glenn Weldon at GH Weldon. You can follow Matt Thompson. Matt, give us your Twitter handle, please.
It is M Thomps, M-T-H-O-M-P-S.
You got in on the ground floor of Twitter, didn't you, buddy?
I tried.
Tanya Ballard Brown, I know your Twitter handle. I'm just going to say it. It's T-double-B, T-D-O-U-B-L-E-B. You can follow our new producer, Jess Gittner, at Jess Gittner, J-E-S-S-G-I-T-N-E-R. You can follow our producer emeritus, Mike Katziff, whose band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music that you are currently tapping your foot to. Now you can follow Mike at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. As always, you can join our happy Facebook community at facebook.com/PCHH, and you can follow the show on the NPR Monkey C blog at npr.org/PCHH. I want to thank all of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll see you next week.